Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
All right, all you budding little socialists out there, get ready to get an education. Today and tomorrow, we'll do socialism part one and socialism part two tomorrow, because it is all the rage now. And if you're not a socialist, well, you apparently don't love your fellow man, and you're just a capitalist pig that wants to take advantage of people. Crush the little guy, pad your own back pocket, to hell with everybody else. So that's your deal. That's kind of what it's starting to feel like, isn't it? If you're not somehow going down the road with Bernie Sanders and a bunch of other millennials. Interestingly enough, a recent study showed that this was millennials, okay, 40 and under, down to about 20 years of age. And then you get into Gen Z. 59% of them had a positive reaction to the word socialism. Okay, 59%, a positive reaction. Chris Matthews, warm fuzzies going at the back of the leg, right? 59% positive to the word socialism. However, at the same time, 61% of them had a positive reaction to the word capitalism. And therein lies the rub. So that's why we're going to talk today with my good friend, Dr. Bruce Ashford, who's, how many titles do you have now, by the way? Welcome back to the show. It's good to see you.
Great to be back on the show, Steve. Thanks.
So not only works, he writes for FoxNews.com. Where else do you show up? You show up on townhall.com. Where all do your writing go?
DailySignal.com for Heritage Foundation, Daily Caller, Gospel Coalition, and then BruceAshford.net, which is the most important of all five, obviously, nationally speaking.
So I've seen one particular thing happened twice in the last, I think we first started doing Facebook Live in 2015 on, I think it was on tax day, April 15th, with Ann Graham Lotz, Billy Graham's daughter. So I've seen, now today's the second time in all of that time that I've seen Facebook is down.
Sweet mother of pearl.
What do you do with that?
There's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, Facebook is down. We're going to talk about socialism today with Dr. Ashford. And, of course, Facebook goes down. So if you're on Facebook Live, if you usually like to jump in on Facebook Live, don't blame me. Blame Mark Zuckerberg. Don't blame Evan, my intern in the other room. Blame Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook is down. Wait a second. Is that Gabriel's horn I hear out there in the background somewhere? So we're just going to not worry about that. We'll keep track of it, and maybe we'll just be out of here before the hour's over, which would be cool. Come on back, Jesus. All right, so we're going to talk about socialism. You've been writing about this a lot. This is a big issue. We've got most of our presidential candidates on the Democrat side who may not outright say that they're all about socialism, but they certainly have socialistic tendencies, from Bernie Sanders on down. None of them are decrying it. None of them are saying, oh, no. I'm not about socialism. So it's a big deal in our culture right now and in the United States of America, shockingly enough. Why have you been writing about it a lot lately?
You know, so biographically, I would just start when I was a kid, you know, in the 80s growing up. The Cold War was still going on. My family and I, every evening, prayed for the believers in the Soviet Union. We actually received a newsletter four times a year with photographs and news stories about pastors and Christians that were sent to concentration camps and slaughtered. Wow. Millions of them, actually. And I never forgot it. And then I lived in Russia right after the fall of the Soviet Union and got to talk with folks in Russia. I lived there for 2 years.
Wow.
About what it was like to live under the socialist oppression.
And were you there as basically a missionary? Was that essentially what you were doing?
I was a university worker. It's illegal to be a missionary.
Right, okay.
But I did actually start a church.
Wow.
While I was there.
Well, good for you. Good job. Praise the Lord.
And then fast forwarding, I think, you know, we've got a lot of really well-intentioned Americans, usually younger, who historically, just because they haven't lived for very long, aren't aware of the unmitigated disaster that socialism is. The more pure of a variety of socialism you get, the more of an unmitigated disaster it is in a society. It induces poverty, and it takes away freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. A highly immoral form of government, if you can call it that at all. So we're going to unpack that today and tomorrow, because there's a lot to go over, and a lot of people are confused. And even if you know that, and inherently know that socialism is wrong, you probably don't know as much about it as you need to know, especially since it's on the rise as a topic of interest here in America, and especially with our younger people. So I want to get through some terms first, and then we'll talk. We're going to spend, because if we're going to talk about Christianity, we're going to talk about Jesus Christ. If we're going to talk about Islam, we're going to talk about Muhammad. And if we're going to talk about socialism, then we talk about Marx, right? So we're going to get there. But there's three main terms that I think sometimes we probably all throw in the same pot. You've got communism, you've got Marxism, and you've got socialism. So help us understand, Bruce, what the difference is between these three.
Yeah, so we'll start with socialism. That's the broadest of all the terms. And Marx was not the first socialist, and he won't be the last, but he's the most important. He's the most famous. All right, so socialism, if you're going to try to encapsulate all the different things that have gone under the name socialism. It is an attempt to sort of push back against private property and to push back usually against capitalism, at least capitalism in the more freer versions, so that you can sort of force economic equality. And often that takes a form of getting rid of private property. So the very first person that I know of that used the term was actually an American named Robert Owen.
Wow.
And he formed a commune. So we're going to get the word communist in a minute. He formed a commune here in America, met with Congress and told them that it was going to be an amazing thing and it would take over the America, but it collapsed. It it fell into absolute ruin because when people don't have private property, you know, things go south. So there have been a number of varieties of socialism. Marxism is the most important variety, and we're going to talk about Marx a lot today. And then communism is a word that's used to describe when a particular variety of socialism wants people to hold all things in common. And it's usually used in reference to the Soviet Union and sometimes also in reference to China.
Is communism just the full bloom of socialism?
Yeah, it's probably the fullest bloom. Yeah, it's the fullest bloom versions we've seen.
Yeah, it's firing on all eight cylinders and the pedal to the metal and the whole system's up and going. So we'll get there, but mostly we're going to focus on socialism. So you mentioned, of course, Karl Marx, and we got to deal with him because, like I said, if we're going to look at Islam, we'll look at Muhammad. If we're going to look at Christianity, we need to look at Jesus Christ. In this case, we need to look at Karl Marx. So what do we do with it? Like who was Karl Marx? What was the deal with his life, and how did he end up with this type of philosophy?
Karl Marx grew up in a Christian home, and we've got writings of his where he extolled the beauty of Jesus Christ and the gospel. Went off to college and got under the influence of a couple of atheistic philosophers and a lot of cans of beer. And he partied and studied under atheist philosophers.
Just because you drink beer doesn't mean you're going to be a socialist.
No, certainly not drawing that conclusion. But he was known for hanging out in the beer gardens, and that's where he came to his sort of socialist conclusions. He married a woman named Jenny. And we'll tell the rest of the story when we come back.
Yeah, when we come back after the break. And isn't it interesting to know that maybe it's your college student, maybe it's my college student, somebody's college student here in these days when we sit there and go, well, they go off to college and this is a new phenomenon. No, it isn't. Karl Marx, the exact same thing happened to him. He can write all about Jesus Christ and the Gospels. The next thing you know, he's giving birth to socialism. This is Steve Noble with Dr. Bruce Ashford. We'll be right back. Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. We are doing a special two-parter today and tomorrow with Dr. Bruce Ashford out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Bruce writes for a number of conservative publications, not the least of which is his own website, but FoxNews.com and TownHall.com. And is it BruceAshford.net? Is that your
.net.
Website?
Yep.
BruceAshford.net. An incredible writer, great thinker, good friend, and also on the board. He's on my board. That doesn't really get you much. You're here, despite the fact that you're on my board. But anyway, I appreciate you being here and talking about this. And this is such a big issue today, as it has been for the last several years. It really was not on the radar screen for a while. Nobody really in America was talking seriously about. Now, we have a socialist party in America, but then we just kind of laugh about them for the last several decades. But all of a sudden, with Bernie Sanders and now a host of other Democrats and a lot of young people, socialism is back on the menu. But the problem is most people have no idea what's kind of cooked into that. And we'll talk about that. We'll end up talking about the kind of this, what is this notion of a democratic socialism, kind of an American bastardization of the whole thing. But we'll end up talking about that. But really, we're focusing right now on the life of Karl Marx. Who was this guy? And how did he get to thinking of and then, of course, instituting the whole notion of socialism? We were talking about his life, and he actually he grew up in a Christian home. We have writings of his extolling the beauty of Christ and the Gospels. Then he goes off to college. And between college and beer, he walks away from all of that. But when did he become kind of a political thinker, though?
Yeah, so right after he became an atheist, he got married and had a number of children. I forget how many children, maybe eight children or something like that. And I think three of them died. He also lived right above the poverty line most of his life. Some of that was his fault. But the combination of struggling financially and not believing in God caused him to say, listen, if God isn't going to save us, if there's not a God around to help us, we better build a system of salvation that's accomplished in this world, because there's nobody outside of this world who's going to help us. So he did. Yeah. And here's what he said. He gave a certain philosophy of history and a certain philosophy of what it means to be a human being. His philosophy of history is that history is determined not by God, but by economic forces. And his philosophy of humanity is that human beings are at heart workers. That's who we are. So if we don't have optimally fulfilling working conditions, it destroys us as people, as who we are. He also believed that our economic status determined our thinking, that we're actually not capable of free thinking. We can't think for ourselves. So, for example, a middle-class person or upper-class person can't think freely. So we shouldn't be reasoned with. We should be forced
right.
to give what we have to people who have less than us. And so the whole economic determinism has been translated into social and cultural terms in America. And instead of merely being determined economically, we're determined by gender, sex, race, or whatever.
Right, so all these different classes.
Marxism is just translated into other categories. So this was Marx's philosophy. Then here's very quickly, and we can talk about it, his critique of capitalism is that capitalism undermines human dignity because it makes us care about nothing but cash. I think he's wrong about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was his view. And he believes that capitalism alienates us from our labor. All right, so a farmer works all day and produces cucumbers and tomatoes, then he gets to eat them and also sell them to his neighbor and help them. Person in a factory, and in Marx's day, the factories were awful, right? These are some bad forms of capitalism
yeah,
that he was critiquing.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a factory and the kids would work for 16 hours a day and then they would never see the fruit of their labor. They'd get a few bucks and they'd work all day to produce widgets and they'd never even get a widget, right? Nor could they take the widget and give it to their neighbor. So Marx says that capitalism is just absolutely fundamentally, you know, a bad system. And then he said, and that's why it's going to self-destruct. And here's his prophecy, and he's wrong. I mean, here's his prophecy, and he said it in no uncertain terms. He was often wrong, but never in doubt.
Right, yeah.
So he said, here's what's going to happen. He said the middle class is going to disappear in capitalism, that the working class people are going to band together and revolt against people who have money, and then a few of the people who have money are going to peel off and help the working class people, and they're going to take over. All right? So they're going to take over the whole government.
Right.
And then what's going to happen is a utopia is going to arise in which everybody is equal economically and owns everything in common. And here's the kicker. And this is what historically is just such a history defeats Marx, because Marx said what would happen at that point is that the state would wither away. There'd be no more
right.
need
There's
for
no
a government.
Need for government.
Government would get so small that it would disappear. And those of us who have looked at Marxism in history, I mean, that's laughable, right?
Totally laughable.
I mean, have you ever heard of a country that's purely socialist that has a small government?
No. No, the government becomes God.
I mean, it's a knee slapper.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Soviet Union.
But he had, I mean, a big part of Marxism and a big part of socialism, and something I think is appealing to most people, even though they might not be able to put the pieces together, is that it's the elimination of classes. So everybody's in the same pool. We can actually live in a cashless society. We just trade and help each other. And there are no classes, which deals with the reality. I don't even know if he saw this. It deals with the natural covetousness that's a part of the fallen sinful man. Is that I want what people have. If they have more than me, I want it. And if I have more than others, I look down on them. And the whole system is a mess, right? Because of our sin.
And it's a false view of a human being is. I mean, there's a belief in Marxism that you can actually engineer people and make them different than what they are. That the bad things in society, all of those things are systemic. The evil doesn't come from within. All of it comes from without.
Yeah.
And that if you can get rid of the evil systems, then people will be good. So I stood in line 20 years ago at Red Square and waited to go stare at Lenin's carcass. All right. And then went underground into his mausoleum and saw his body, or a wax figure that they're saying was his body. And it had a slogan on there. And this will be at least an exact quote, that Lenin was this Lord of the new humanity and the savior of the new world.
Whoa.
All right. And Lenin had tried to enact Marx's vision. And I mean, that is the kind of rhetoric that pure socialists use. Savior rhetoric, Lord rhetoric.
Yeah.
So Lenin tried to fulfill Marx's vision of bringing a salvation from within the world, because nobody really believes anymore, he would say, that there's going to be a salvation from without. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So because I brought religion in a conversation, and you've been folding it in the whole time. But can we look at Marxism as kind of a false religion?
It is a false religion. Can we take 2 minutes to talk about, because nobody ever does this, and I think in order to win the day in our criticisms, we have to recognize what was good.
Sure, absolutely.
And in any bad system, there's going to be good factors, right? So a few places we can agree with Marx. It looked like Marx had a genuine compassion for people who were being abused in factories. Now, there's going to be some people on the right who won't grant that, but I don't see any reason not to grant it. It seemed like he had some genuine compassion.
Yeah, that's the reality of the world we live in.
Yeah, he had some genuine concern for human dignity. He didn't want to see children laboring for 16 hours in a factory and getting nothing in return except for a broken back and an early death. He valued labor, and I think the Bible wants us to value labor.
Absolutely.
I mean, Marx is wrong that we are kind of defined by labor and economics, right? It's not all of who we are. It's part of who we are. But he was right to value it, even if he overvalued it. He was right to fight corruptions in the market, in the free market. There are problems with capitalism. But I would say it's the, and I'm getting this from somebody famous, maybe Churchill. Almost everything good was said by Churchill.
Almost.
Right? Capitalism is the least, democracy and capitalism together are the least bad forms of politics and economics right. that we can find.
Exactly.
With fallen human beings. And then finally, and this is similar to the recognizing that labor is important, that recognizing that economics matters. It does matter. Economic systems matter. So let's make the best one that we can. And then when we come back in a minute, we'll talk about, and I'm not overstating the case here, that Marxism functions as a false religion.
Sure.
We're going to explore that. I'm going to prove it, Steve. Are you skeptical?
Of you? Not usually. But that's an important thing because we usually don't talk about it in those terms, but you have to look at it that way because that's part of its allure. We don't want to deal with God. We don't want to deal with the gospel, so we easily follow a false religion. That's what socialism offers.
Let's try it all together. One, two.
Okay, newsflash. Apparently, Jesus is not returning today because Facebook is back up. That's breaking news here on this show and any other show is sad. But it is the reality. So if you want to join us on Facebook Live, you can do that. The Steve Noble Show, that's just the page on Facebook. You're probably looking at it anyway. Perhaps you were deep in prayer asking the Lord to return your God to you. And then if that's the case, boy, we all need have some work to do. But I think we all struggle with that one. But Facebook's back up. So if you want to jump in the studio with us, The Steve Noble Show is just the Facebook page. So you can do that. Here with Dr. Bruce Ashford, a good friend of mine and just a great conservative Christian theological writer. And he's the provost here at Southeastern Baptist and has been teaching out here as well and writes for a lot of different organizations, foxnews.com, townhall.com, a bunch of other things, as well as bruceashford.net. Just an incredible thinker, great brother, and we're happy to have him here in the studio today and tomorrow, kind of doing a two-part conversation on socialism because it's obviously all the rage. And so we're kind of unpacking Marx's life and looking at his life. We talked about his actual thought process. And then Marxism as a false religion, which we started to unpack, but I want to make sure we spend a fair amount of time there. Yeah. And then we're going to move to a kind of the disastrous history.
Yep.
Because that's one of the challenges, I think, for a lot of young people is they just don't know history. And so for them, they hear socialism and they think, well, Denmark and Sweden, they have some pretty cool things going on there. But that's not actually the history of socialism. We'll end up there today and then we'll come back tomorrow and unpack really what is this whole notion of democratic socialism in the American context. But back to Marxism as a false religion.
Yeah, so, you know, when I say that Marxism is a false religion, let me qualify it for a minute. I'm not being facetious, and I'm not being a shock jock, all right? So when the Bible talks about false religion, it often talks about it in terms of idolatry. So I want you to just hang with me for 1 minute while we define idolatry, everyone out there. And then after we do that, I'm going to try to show that Marxism is an idolatrous political ideology, all right? So when the Bible talks about an idol, it's talking about anything in the created world that we love, trust, and obey more than we love, trust, and obey Christ, all right? Anything we ascribe ultimacy to, anything we absolutize, it could be sex or money or power, it could be comfort, it could be success, it could be the approval of people. I mean, we idolize all kinds of things. And what you'll notice if you pay attention to modern political ideologies, they arise from secular roots, and they all tend to be idolatrous. Marxism idolizes material equality.
Mm.
That everybody should have the same amount of stuff. It cares about that more than anything else. And once you've taken anything that God created, like material equality, and elevated above God, it becomes a cudgel that is used to beat down other aspects of God's creation. And it ends up hurting people. All right? So that's a little bit about idolatry. Now,
some people would say, you know, this kind of equality of income and every and outcome, and everybody has the same thing. A lot of people might actually say, well, that sounds actually kind of Christian. But nowhere does the scripture point us to that.
Yeah, in order to get there, you have to perpetrate some pretty big injustices. You have to take from people large amounts of what they've earned and do it in a coercive manner. You remove a lot of the motivation for people to do things out of grace and mercy and love because you forced their hand. You forced them to do it. And what Marxism does, because it's an idolatrous ideology, is it becomes totalizing. So in order to achieve the socialist utopia, right, in order to get to this situation where all of the wealth is equally distributed, you have to forcibly take people's stuff from them. Not just their money, but in a real socialist scenario, you're taking away all their property. So you take all of that away. Then also you have to get rid of dissenters. And because Marxist socialism is atheistic, there's no belief in any absolute morality given by God. So good and bad becomes defined according to one question. What helps the socialist communist party achieve its ends?
Yeah.
All right? And so that's why the Soviet Union in the USSR and the People's Republic in China have been able to justify the killing and torture of, I mean, the Soviet Union, just in about a 30-year period after Lenin, only the first 30 years of the Soviet Union, approximately 1.7 million people either died in concentration camps or assassinated.
Yeah.
So it's a totalizing ideology. And then I'm going to do this really quickly. You know, I talk too much, Steve. You know that. I'm a professor. And so you can, you just.
No, if you lose me, if I think you're losing anybody, I'll jump in.
I'm going to prove that Marxism is a system of salvation, and I'm going to argue that it's got at least eight doctrines. All right? I think I've got that counted correctly. All right? So Marxism, God is material equality. Its evil is material inequality and class struggle. What's evil is that people don't have the same amount of money, and therefore they're competing with one another. That's what evil is. It's not Satan. It's not some other thing like the Bible would define it. Salvation is Marxist ideology and Marxist revolution. Marx's view of the church is pockets of classless people in an evil capitalist world. Little pockets of people, right?
Yeah.
It's priesthood.
They're the righteous.
Yeah.
Versus all the evil.
It's pastors / missionaries. Are the Communist Party and its biggest proponents. Its ethic is to do whatever needs to be done to achieve a socialist state, including violence. And if you want blood running like a river through the streets of your nation, buy into Marxism full bore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's happened, you know, every time. They have an end times, and they have an eschatology, to use another $5 word from systematic theology. Eschatology just means a view of the end times, and that is that once there's material equality, and once you've forced it, and you've gotten rid of this evil capitalist system, there won't be evil anymore. Because evil doesn't come from within the human heart. It comes from bad systems outside of us. And so then there won't be a need for a state anymore, right? You won't need police. You won't need military. You'll have a utopia.
Well, as you describe this, Bruce, and we're talking to Dr. Bruce Ashford today and tomorrow about socialism, and right now we're unpacking Marxism, which is really the core of all this, and tomorrow we'll focus on democratic socialism kind of in the American context. But the more you describe it, the more I understand why people, young people in particular, and young people who do not have a biblical worldview, this becomes very appealing. Because you're getting rid of, now everybody gets the same stuff, you don't have anybody on top of you, that's kind of taking advantage of you. There's this whole social justice feel to it where it starts to look like, yeah, well, you know, the rich people, which is why we always sow into this, because we covet. That's part of the fallen human condition. You go, yeah, we got to deal with the rich people. And even if it means we need to take their stuff, that's for the betterment of everybody. And eventually they'll come around and they'll figure it out, too. And this is good for everybody. There's this strange satanic altruism to the appeal, I think, to a lot of people on socialism.
Marx actually wrote his system with his Bible at his elbow. In other words, he had in mind the Christian system of salvation he had learned growing up in the Lutheran state church, and he just created an alternative system that taught each of the same doctrines, only with no God.
Yeah.
And for those of you out there listening, if you my book last year, Letters to an American Christian, actually describes all of this in very simple terms and gives you talking points where you can talk with your neighbor, your progressive neighbor, and begin to reason with them on this. And I think it's an important thing for us to wrap our heads around. Do we have time for me to read a 5-line quote that I think is a wicked, wicked good quote?
Absolutely.
It's by a guy named Peter Kreft. He's a philosopher at Boston College. He's an amazing guy. Here's what he says. Marxism retains all of the major structural and emotional factors of biblical religion, but in a secularized form. Here we go. He says, Marx, like Moses, is the prophet who leads the new chosen people, the working class, out of the slavery of capitalism into the promised land of communism, across the Red Sea of bloody worldwide revolution, and through the wilderness of temporary suffering from the Communist Party. The messianic, just referring to the Messiah, the messianic tone of communism makes it structurally and emotionally more like a religion than any other political system except for fascism. Wow. Fascism, of course, referring to Mussolini and Hitler.
Yeah.
I think Kreft always says it better than everyone else.
Well,
C.S. Lewis.
And the reality there is he's dealing on a spiritual plane, which involves everybody. And if you don't want to go down the road that leads you to God, I think it was C.S. Lewis that said the human heart is an idol factory. So if you don't want to go down the road that leads you to God because you don't want his stinking rules in your life, this becomes pretty appealing because you're going to worship something. And you're a spiritual being, so you're going to go down a spiritual road. This is just the one that rejects all Christianity and embraces the flesh, really.
I mean, to your point, I mean, as a side note, I mean, we're doing socialism, but if you're going to kick God out and you don't want to be a socialist per se, there's other systems that do the same thing. I mean, there's this move, and some socialists believe in this too, there's a move now to push for a world without religion or nations. Mm. A borderless world where nations don't have borders, and a religionless world where there are no really strong religious institutions. I mean, you can be a fake religion that's mainly just...
Dabble a little.
Yeah, but none of the strong forms. Because the belief there is that religion just causes war, and borders just cause wars. Mm. So these are institutions that oppress us, and if we can liberate from these institutions, humanity can be shown to be the good humanity that it really is, right?
Yeah.
And this is the lie of Satan. Every major world religion outside of Christianity believes that human beings are neutral or good. Christianity teaches that the evil actually comes from within. Have you ever seen The Village? Have you seen that movie, The Village?
Absolutely. Yeah. M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't seen the movie, you need to go see the movie because the whole point of the movie, it's about people who thought they could get away from the evil world and build a new commune, actually.
And guess
what
happened?
Where there would be no evil. But evil sprouted in their midst because evil is in the heart of every
one
of us.
That's right. And a very wise friend of ours once said, you take you with you everywhere you go. So if you want evil to show up somewhere, all you need to do is show up yourself because it's right there with you.
Another wise friend said, you do you.
Or there's that. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. All is well in the world because Facebook's back up. So if you want to join us here in the studio, Facebook Live, we do that Monday through Friday when Facebook is cooperating, which normally it does. Just go to the Steve Noble Show. That's the Facebook page, and you can jump in the studio there where you will see myself as well as Dr. Bruce Ashford. We're doing a 2-day show on socialism, and we're kind of starting with Marxism and Marx and looking at all of that, his life, his thought process, his philosophy, and Marxism as a false religion. And now we're going to talk about the disastrous history. And this is one of the biggest problems for a lot of our younger people in America that seem drawn to this, because there is a kind of an alternate false religion allure to Marxism and this strange altruism, which when you don't have any facts, altruism can take you down all kinds of bad roads. And that's the problem, is a lot of our young people, and when they go off to colleges, you got plenty of Marxist philosophers there and a whole lot of people that embrace socialism, and they're not ready to defend anything, them being our students. And they go off there and they're just not ready, which is why so many of them walk away from the church, and then they start to embrace socialism. We're going to talk about kind of this American brand, quote-unquote, democratic socialism tomorrow. But today, we'll finish this last segment. When we talk about, you got to look at the history of a thing. That matters.
Yep.
If we're going to look at the history of a thing, in this case, the history of Marxism, socialism, which is nothing less than disastrous. Is that an overstatement?
Not an overstatement. So, the Bible's teaching about idolatry is that when you take something that God created and you elevate it above God and make an idol out of it, things are not going to go well. You can't contradict reality forever with impunity. Reality is going to bite back.
Yeah.
And if you make sex into an idol, it's going to happen. If you make power into an idol, I mean, you name it, it's going to come back and bite you. Idols are false saviors. They can't ever deliver on what they promise. And number two, they're domineering lords. They're terrible lords. And so that happened with Marxism. And so the first thing that I would mention is that Marxism's abolition of private property, instead of leading to liberation, like Marx promised, it led to oppression. Think about it. If you can't own a house, if you can't own private property, you've got nothing other than your own soul. Now, that's still something. You've got your soul.
Sure,
and that's why a believer can live with joy and confidence, even if everything else has been taken away. But that's all you've got. You got nothing else. You can't retreat to your home because you don't have a home. Just let that sink in for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Staggering. The government has you every way possible if you can't even own private property. Number two, historically, Marxist states, and we can park on this one for a minute, have been authoritarian and usually totalitarian, all right? Because of the end-time utopian vision, since you're going to achieve this amazing end-time state where everybody's equal and everything can get fixed in the here and now, anything can be justified, and anything has been justified. And I'm going to come back to the stats here from 1921 to 1953 alone. So 4 years after the October Revolution, which was 1917. 4 years after that, from 1921 to 1953, using the Soviet Union's own history books, this is not American history, this is Soviet history, 1.7 million Soviet citizens died in concentration camps. Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote about that. I wrote about an article about him on my website, bruceashford.net. Richard Wormbrand, Romanian pastor. I mean, the number, there's 1.7 million of them that died in the Gulag. 800,000 were executed. So a lot of them died by starvation. They would make them what are they called? Grist mills.
Because you can justify that on your way to a utopian society.
Yeah.
It's the good of the, just to quote Spock here, it's the good of the many outweigh the good of the few or the one.
Yeah, if you've got 1.9 billion people that you're going to give heaven to.
Oh, my goodness.
Then what's 1.7 billion?
Nothing. It's a worthy sacrifice. That's all that is.
The Soviet Union's understanding of humanity was atheistic, and so it eased its conscience. I'm going to read you a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. If you haven't read him, start with the article on my website, because it'll give you quotes, and it'll make you want to read him, and I'll point you to where you can read him. He said this, describing Marxism's low view of humanity in the Soviet Union, "In the mass and from a distance, they, people, seem like swarming lice. But aren't they the crown of creation?" Because he was a Christian. He understood we're the crown of creation. "After all, once upon a time, a spark of God was breathed into them too. Is that not true? So what has become of that now?" And then he just goes on to talk about, he described his own torture, Richard Wormbrand and others. Wormbrand, Romanian pastor, was called before U.S. Congress. He escaped, was called before Congress, took off his shirt in
front
of Congress.
Is that Torture for Christ?
Yeah, Torture for Christ. You got to read it, those of you out there. He took off his shirt in front of Congress. He had several bones broken. He had had 18 holes either burned or carved into his body, either with a hot iron poker or with a knife. And so the party's conscience was alleviated, because if you're going to save a billion people providing a communist utopia, why not kill, millions? Then the other thing is that Marx's understanding of humanity, the fact that we're economically determined, means that we're not really free thinkers at all. We can't think for ourselves. We're not people to be reasoned with then. We're people to be coerced and forced. And so if you think you're a free thinker and you're pushing back against the problems with Marxism and communism, they're going to come back and say, you can't be reasoned with. You think the way you think because you're a middle class person. So they deal with you by means of force, not by means of persuasion. You're someone to be shouted down or locked up. And then, the perennial, like we talked about a minute ago, the perennial problem with any idolatry or with any false religion is the view that evil doesn't come from within the human. That it can be explained away by any number of factors.
So if they have the right system in place,
it's somebody else's fault.
But we'll get rid of it.
It's always some other institution's fault. So crush the institution and start over again, and you get rid of evil. And then basically this is a form of moral relativism. If there's no God, then the morality we're purporting is self-authorized. There's no lawgiver, so there's no real law.
Sure.
And in that sort of a situation, I mean, and that's where I think a lot of Americans are today. The last, and then we can just jaw some for a minute, but the last criticism is that Marxism, ironically, has induced poverty, has caused people to become more poor, and at the same time, even more ironically, so many ironies in the fire, that party leaders have become extravagantly wealthy. Unbelievable.
Like, I mean, extravagantly.
Like, if you want to find, I mean, people talk about the 1% in America. Go take a look at the Soviet Union or the Chinese party. I mean, the Chinese, if I understand correctly, I've got stats on it. We'll talk about it tomorrow. I'll give you the exact numbers.
Okay.
The Communist Party in China has a mind-boggling number of billionaires, while nearly everyone else lives at a pretty low
level.
And the only reason China is doing fairly well compared to the Soviet Union is because it allows for private entrepreneurship.
Right.
It's not really and truly socialist.
No, not at all.
It's partly, kind of.
It's like a hybrid.
Sort of. But when I lived in the Soviet Union, you know, and I talked with my friends, you know, they experienced communism, which beat them down mercilessly. And then after that, what they got was a version of crony capitalism. Not even a healthy version of capitalism.
Right.
The Communist Party and the KGB split up and formed the mafia groups that then ruled the economy. And so they just felt like they were cursed.
Yeah.
That they could, I think we have a lot of problems here in the States, and the problems are getting worse, but we're still blessed.
Oh, absolutely. There's no comparison there.
Very blessed, and I think we need to, I'm not going to speak in glowing terms like this good guy, Ben Shapiro, he's a good guy. I like him. Or Jonah Goldberg, another good guy. I won't speak in as glowing terms as them. I don't think we were basically kind of a utopia. Yeah, maybe they wouldn't say that, but we've had our problems, and we have our problems now, but we're also blessed.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you say that? I mean,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. There's really no valid comparison between the American experiment and the results, tainted as they are.
Fidel Castro's...
And anywhere else in the world.
Fidel Castro's funeral, when his car broke down in the funeral procession... You know, I mean, that really is a picture of what happens with centralized government when you get rid of private property, when you pay street sweepers the same amount that you pay heart surgeons.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
No.
Who's going to go to 12 years of medical school and work 70 hours a week and have no vacations to be a heart surgeon when they can make the same amount of money to be a professor like me?
Well, listen,
our radio show host.
Our radio show host like me, the very first settlers in America tried it. Half of them died over that winter, and just bring all your stuff in, and we'll split it up evenly, and people take advantage of it. Why? Because people are broken and sinful, and your government system isn't going to change that. That's why, ultimately, I think one of the biggest problems we face in America today in terms of the allure of this notion of democratic socialism is the lack of any widespread biblical Christianity and a biblical worldview. So when you don't have that, all the other false religions start to look appealing, and we see, as believers, we see through the glass dimly. For an unbeliever, they can't even see.
No idol, no matter what the idol is, much less material equality, can bear the weight of our hopes and dreams.
No, that's
no
for sure.
Idol is ever going to deliver. And this inherent in socialism and progressivism is this belief that humanity is basically good, and that if we get rid of these systems, these religious institutions, these borders, these economic institutions, all of a sudden people are going to prosper. And I know I've talked about it. We talked about it twice already on the show, but it bears repeating again. I think that is maybe the biggest false teaching in the country.
Yeah.
That goes across ideological lines.
Sure.
Outside of socialism.
Yep.
Europe is infected with it. The European Union was kind of an experiment in that. Now, I don't want to cast judgment. I mean, Europe dealt with some stuff America's never dealt with.
Sure. Yeah.
They saw evil on a global scale and with a force that we never felt it.
Mm-hmm.
And the response, it's not wrong to have a UN or an EU, per se. But if your motivation for doing it is thinking that getting rid of borders are going to help people all of a sudden flourish, it's not going to happen.
No.
Evil comes from within, not from without.
That's right. And again, reality will come back and devour you, which is what we're seeing around the world. We'll pick this up tomorrow with Dr. Bruce Ashford as we kind of do socialism part two. And we'll look at this notion in America called democratic socialism. So what's the answer ultimately to all this stuff? Well, it's the gospel, and that's why we're excited to be partnering with Transworld Radio. AfricaNeedsJesus.org, up in the Horn, okay, Northwest Africa, Northern Nigeria, spiritual battleground, has been for 10 years. Our friends at TWR are building a 200,000-watt transmitter to broadcast the gospel in there. They need our help to help fund that, because ultimately the gospel is always the reason. That's the only answer, ultimately, that we can give to any of these things. AfricaNeedsJesus.org is that website, AfricaNeedsJesus.org. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.